Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and on the line with us today is Sam Sykes of DoingWorks.com. Sam is the founder of this company and a training organization. DoingWorks is a training organization that specializes in experiential learning techniques. Sam trains, facilitates, and speaks in a variety of corporate and educational settings, including Fortune 500 companies, small businesses, and universities. And I know him, and he is also best known for his creativity. He has got an amazingly creative mind. Sam has trained groups of as few as two people and as many as 3,000. He trains facilitators and develops related indoor and outdoor training activities for adults. Though I tell you what, I've used some of his stuff with all ages. He is an active in organizations such as the Association for Experiential Education and the American Society for Training and Development. In 1996, Sam was recognized as Practitioner of the Year in a five-state region for his achievements in training by the Association for Experiential Education. In 2000, Sam was honored with the Carl Ronke Creativity Award from AEE. The Association for Experiential Education. Sam holds a master's degree in industrial organization psychology from the University of Tulsa and a bachelor's degree in psychology from Texas Tech University. And he's published many books, and I think I have all of them on my shelf: Feeding the Zircon Gorilla, Executive Marbles, Raptor, Virtual World, 50 Ways to Use Your Noodle, 50 More Ways to Use Your Noodle, The Equestrian Knights of UMA, and Indoor Games for College Students and the Extremely Bored. Sam, I'd like to welcome you to the call.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
Well, Sam, we have members in all across the world, all of whom are leading workshops and team-building events of some kind or another, whether it's a classroom teacher or someone at a university position or, anybody from who's leading trainings at a corporate office. And most likely, they are using what you and I would call props to help the training move along, help their experiential activity to give it some meat. So today what we're going to be talking about is the use of props in experiential activities. So could you start us off by what do you mean, Sam Sykes, who's made more props than I can even imagine and even looks at the most mundane thing as a prop? What do you consider a prop?
It's filling my garage. What I mean by props really is just it's any kind of equipment or anything you might need for an activity or a demonstration. It's the it's things like even paper, pencils, but it could be a rubber chicken.
Right, the rubber. Okay, the famous rubber chicken. So what makes a good prop?
Well, there are several things that they go into a good prop. There are a lot of bad props too, but let me focus on the good first.
Okay.
I would call something a good prop if it really does get the point across. For example, I have a friend of mine who works a lot with salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this roll of cash, or at least it looks like a roll of cash anyway.
Okay.
And he'll pull this thing out of his pocket and throw it in the air, and it just explodes with money all over the floor. And you wouldn't believe how many people actually jump down on the ground to grab this stuff. And, so it makes it's a really good prop, and it makes the point for him on sales and these salespeople. Another prop that would really get the point across that's a little bit unusual is you may have seen there a ball. It's an electronic ball, and you can touch one lead, and if you touch the other lead, then it makes a sound or lights up.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've used it for, and it's a real specialty kind of prop, is if you touch one lead and then have people hold hands in a circle, and that last person, instead of holding your hand, will touch the other lead, well, it'll light up. But if anybody breaks a chain, it disconnects. So you can make some real team-oriented conclusions based on that kind of prop. So basically getting the point across is makes for a good one.
So tell me about, give me a couple on the other side. So those are a couple of things that make a good prop, and I'm sure there's some more. What are some things that... or situations where you've seen props misused or bad props?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think more of safety than anything else.
Hmm.
If you've ever been involved in a group juggle before, where people have, actually used things like, heavy balls or sharp objects that they weren't even thinking about.
Oh my gosh!
I've even made the mistake of using like a mouse trap in a group juggle.
Not said.
No, mouse trap isn't so bad, but there's that wire that hangs
yes.
off the end. Well,
yes.
You need to either remove that or tape it up because it's just a possibility for injury.
Right, right.
But other things that are what I call, and this is just a personal opinion, a bad prop would be something that has been used so many times before that people automatically kind of look away or get involved in something else rather than focusing on the training. For instance, some people use a prop of the overheads, and you've got the beautiful woman or the old hag.
Yes.
It's been overused.
Yes.
And that's one reason I like to use things that are unusual or mm-hmm. new, at least. And definitely in a different setting.
Well, boy, that's a great example. That sort of reminds me of the activities that have been so used. I mean, there's the props that have been so overused, and then there's some, experiential activities that have been so used, and not presenting those. And that's part of what we're doing is trying to develop new things, so that people have a lot of choices. So tell me some more. What also makes a good prop? When I look through some of your books, I'm just amazed at how you have used everyday items so creatively. There's one that you had was I call it island hopping, where you had 2x4s and rugs attached, sections of rugs, and it could all roll up and fit in your car.
I think that's the portable zigzag or something.
Yes,
like
yes.
But there are a lot of things like that. That whole idea of when you were saying rolling it up and putting it in your car reminds mm-hmm. me of it. Another thing about props that, for me personally, makes a great difference is that they're transportable. You don't have to rent a van or get an 18-wheeler to port this thing around.
Mm-hmm.
You can slip it in your pocket or put it in your suitcase and travel with it. And things like, like this portable zigzag, or there's another one, Islands, and the new Raptor boat, where literally you're taping what used to be platforms on like a rope's course.
Mm-hmm.
You're just using masking tape to tape out the island itself with a small 4x4 puzzle piece, if you will, a section that you lay a 4x4 in.
Mm-hmm.
So to do this, what used to be a really large-scale activity with lots of props, now it goes to masking tape and two 4x4s. That you can make in any particular length.
And Sam, maybe you can provide our listeners with an idea of you as a trainer, because that's something that you would do inside, maybe on a carpeted floor perhaps, but someone who's thinking in terms of outdoor on the grass, they wouldn't be able to use that activity.
Not as easily. Masking tape you can use for a lot of things, especially indoors. Outdoors, you can make even things like spider webs.
Mm-hmm.
But for outdoors, you can substitute with like what you were mentioning earlier, carpet, to have literally a piece of flat carpet and cut out the notches in it if you're going to use the same activity.
So, in your mind, you're substituting a big wooden platform for a prop like that. Do you see a loss in what the participants get if they're 4 inches off the ground or just standing on the ground in the case of a big wooden platform and a piece of duct tape a rectangle or a square on the ground. Do you see that there's a loss or a gain either way?
I think it really has more to do with how the activity is set up. For, you know, with the 4 to 6 inches off the ground, there's a reality of falling or tipping off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And with it literally being on the ground, it's more like in your scenario, if you want to use one of those fantastic scenarios, let's say it's a virus or something like that, that
yes.
in contact with the floor, horrible things happen to them. Well, in those kinds of situations, people imagine the threat out there, whereas if it's like a elevated platform or something like that, they don't have to use their imagination so much because it's right there.
Good point. So you really seek to tap into their imagination through the prop. That's an important aspect for you.
Absolutely. And it allows me to do activities that I wouldn't be able to do otherwise by making it real transportable or indoor, outdoor, taking it to places. For instance, islands or a zigzag, I just wouldn't be able to do in some locations unless I were, you know, to stay there for a few days and build one build one ahead of time.
Right. So, I mean, and you travel, when you travel with your props on, say, a plane, and you're going to work with 20 or 50 or people, I'm curious, how many... What kind of props can you boil it down to? I mean, are we talking you can fit it in your pocket, or are we talking a small duffel bag?
My my favorite is a hard side roller bag, and you can like a Samsonite type of roller bag.
Yes,
something about at the largest the 31-inch, and usually I can get everything in that, with the exception of things like noodles.
The
foam noodles, and you can actually strap those together in bundles and have, gosh, what would it be, up to about 70 noodles strapped together in one big bundle, and they count it as one check-in.
And you just check it in?
Yeah. That and hula hoops usually make some big comments from all airlines people.
With a piece of luggage that size, just the, like you said, the Samsonite piece, how many props could you fit in there, could Sam Sykes fit in there to work with a group? And, I mean, how big could the group be?
Well, I think of this past summer, I went to Singapore, and literally I had a bag for my clothes, and then I had one other roller bag for the props. I was working with 1,000 people for 3 days. And,
oh my gosh!
Now, you know, in all fairness, they did gather quite a few things themselves, but buddy ropes, about 5 foot lengths of ropes, I had enough for everybody. I didn't use the thick ropes; I used parachute cord.
Yes.
And for all the activities we did, that made it really easy. And that's one of the things about what makes a good prop is that you can use them for a lot of different things, not just one activity.
Can you give me an example of like one of your favorite multi-use props?
This whole idea of a buddy rope, a 5 foot length of rope. I use that quite often for activities like.
And let me clarify for our listeners. This piece of rope, it could be a parachute cord, so a relatively small diameter. You're not tying any knots in it. It's just a piece of rope.
It's just a piece of rope. Yeah, it's not a lifeline or anything like that.
Okay.
It really is just something a person would have. And there are several magic kind of tricks you can do with it. You can do an activity called One with the Rope, where a team of people is trying to tie an overhand knot in just one of these ropes. You can do one that's almost been overused, and that's to untangle a group of people. Usually you have them hold hands, but you can, to make it more challenging, you can have these buddy ropes in between each of the participants.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up in a big circle at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
First, they're in a big knot. What else do I use that? you can tie them together and make a, as long as you're not going to be pulling on it tightly, you can make borders or parameters for your activities.
Okay.
And so you know you can kind of expand it that way. And I know that Jim Kane and I've played a lot using all of his.
Raccoon circles?
Well, you wouldn't want to use those for raccoon circles.
Okay.
But you can use them for any of those decision-making knot games where it
yes.
is a knot or not. You know?
Okay. right.
So there's quite a few of them that you can do. And I don't know what there's something about people just holding on to a piece of rope. All of a sudden they start tying knots and they start fiddling with their hands and it keeps them occupied and people come up with just amazing things that they do with these buddy ropes. So, you know, just one example.
Sure.
I mean, there are a lot of things that I use quite often. I use the either carpet circles or poly spots, which are about 9 inches in diameter or so. I use those for quite a few things as boundary markers and places to step. And I get to use those over and over again. In fact, I have some that I've used for literally 15 years.
Wow. And these are just pieces of carpet, small pieces of carpet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always cut them into circles, I guess because I started off that way with the poly spots.
Right.
But squares work just as well.
Okay.
And they're a lot easier to cut, too.
Well, now, I'm getting ready to travel to a conference to lead a little workshop, and I think that I'm... violating probably one of the rules that you have here is, and that is, can you have too many props? And if there's, you talked about your garage being full of props, and boy, I am guilty of that. I can't get enough of the props. So, what happens? Why do you say you can have too many? What happens in a training when you have? How do you know when you have too many?
I know I have too many. I start thinking to myself, wow, how much work was that to get that activity set up for a group?
Oh, yeah.
And it only took, 15 minutes of time for the group to complete it.
Okay.
Or when you're loading your car and you think, I don't think I can actually get all this stuff in the car.
Ways to know you have too many props.
Well, there's a version of the Equestrian Knights of Uma that when I originally made it, I made it a biggie size, if you will. And it uses 2x4s and bricks and pipe and things like that.
Oh, my.
Well, it literally does take my van to stuff it into.
Just that one activity.
Just that one activity. And now I've changed it for most people that are not going to be able to have a van and transport it around. So I do have a roller bag version. That I usually use for indoor or outdoor folks.
Mm-hmm.
But the pieces are smaller, and you don't have to use the big bricks or anything like that and still get the same impact from the activity.
Hmm. So what do you consider some common props? You listed some at the beginning of our conversation, but to get our listeners thinking about, okay, we've talked about all kinds of props here. What are some common ones that that people could find and then, maybe use in some of their team-building activities?
I'd say most of the common ones that I use quite often with experiential activities are like tennis balls, even the playing cards. There are a lot of activities just using a deck of cards or multiple decks of cards. One of the most useful props that I have is masking tape. In fact,
really,
I will throw in a roll of masking tape, figuring that there are enough activities. If I had to, I could cover a day's worth of events if I absolutely had to.
With a roll of masking tape.
With a roll of masking tape.
You got to tell. Give me a couple of them. What are they?
Let's see. There's one called a sticky situation, and that's where you challenge a team within a confined area to completely unroll the roll of masking tape. It can't touch anything but skin, and it can never touch itself or anything else.
Oh, my God. And how long is the roll of masking tape?
Well, it really varies. I've kind of become a masking tape snob. I hate to admit it. But 3M really does make the best masking tape.
And oh, man.
Remember, in fact, that's one of the big questions that everybody asks, and I just shrug my shoulders. But they figure it out, and one way or another.
So what is the best kind of masking tape? Is 3M? Is it just the kind of the Manila, the brown stuff?
You can get that if you want to, for most of the activities. The brown, the one that we're familiar with.
Yes.
Is the best kind, and I usually get about an inch in diameter.
Uh huh.
Or inch
wide.
Yeah, and if you want to go fancy for marking boundaries, the blue tape works really well.
Yeah, the painters use that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they use both of it, but I've had experience with the blue tape because it doesn't tend to pull paint off of the wall.
That's right, and you just have to be careful not to get the lime green.
Don't get lime green.
Although green is my favorite color, lime green is meant to be extra secure. So it'll rip carpet off the floor.
Wow.
Which I've found out.
So a day's worth of activities out of one roll of masking tape.
Absolutely.
That is great. What a great prop. So tell me, what are some unusual props that you consider like, okay, those are out there, probably ones that our listeners haven't heard of?
Let's see. One that I use quite often is a ricochet ball. It's also called a reaction ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rubber ball with, I guess, six bumps on it. And the property of it is if you drop it on the ground, you don't know where it's going to bounce. And so people have to be really aware of what's going on. And there's several activities you can use to try to catch this thing.
Hmm.
And in fact, there's a whole book by Chris Cavert about the ricochet ball.
Yes.
Some of the other things, let's see. I guess those foam noodles, and that has been one of the biggest, not really surprise props, but one that has made me laugh more than anything else. just those foam pool noodle toys.
Right, the kids use in swimming pools.
Yeah, they're about as tall as most people, and then what we do is cut them in half or into small sections.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess there's about 105 different activities you can do with them now.
105, and these are actually described in your 50 ways to use your noodle and 50 more ways to use your noodle.
Yes. They're unusual, and one of the nice things about them is people really do pay attention. You pull those out, and everybody's asking, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Yes.
And, of course, you know what everybody wants to do.
They want to hit each other.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons we wrote the book, is to offer some alternatives to just whapping the fuck out of each other.
Well, I guess that's good.
the other one, I get lots of questions. So in fact, you and I have even had conversations about it, is mousetraps.
Yes. Brilliant. Tell us what those... How do you use a mousetrap?
Well, I avoid juggling them. No. I use mousetraps in a lot of different ways. One of the things that about a mousetrap, and it makes it such a nice prop, is you've got a potential... You have a fear factor in there.
Mm.
And the fear factor isn't so real. I mean, these things, if they snap and they snap on you, they hurt. They really do. In fact, I just got snapped a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't injure you. It's not like they're going to break a bone or anything like that.
Right.
But people are real familiar with these things. And typically, fear is the one thing that everybody relates to with a mousetrap. And here we are using activities where I'm actually going to ask you to put your hand on one of these things, not to snap it, but to unsnap it, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some trust activities to use with those, also some problem solving, and if that activity we mentioned earlier with the platform, the islands, if you put those in the open areas, loaded, it also adds to the, oh my gosh, I don't want to step off on one of these things.
Right.
So it adds a little bit to the That's the experience.
And you've traveled around the world leading games. Have you used mouse traps with all these different populations?
I would have to say yes. I don't work too often with really young kids,
mm-hmm.
although I have a couple of young kids myself. And for them, you have to be a little bit more cautious. You have to have a group, especially using the mouse traps, that are going to pay attention to instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Who aren't going to be throwing these things at other people.
Right.
Those kind of things.
So, cross-culturally, I'm just curious, like when you went to Asia, the mouse trap, you don't see any difference in the relationship that you would see for people here. Everybody recognizes it. They still have that, oh, gosh, this is kind of, there's still a little bit of that fear in there.
There is, and it's surprising, even for people who aren't quite familiar with at least that design.
Uh-huh.
It seems like all cultures, all nations have a similar kind of trap for mice. And they real quickly see what is going on, and it's like, I don't want to get
stuck. tell our listeners that how tall of a structure you have built with set mouse traps, loaded mouse traps.
Well, I'll start off by saying about 6-7 years ago, it
uh-huh.
was only 8 levels or 16 traps. I create a tower of these things, and you set them on their edges. You load them and then set them on their edges, and you can do 2 on the bottom, and then 2 on top of that, and 2 on top of that, and so on. Well, about 6 years ago or so, 8 levels or 16 traps was as tall as I'd ever gotten.
Okay.
And
before it would explode, or
oh yeah,
because these are all set mouse traps sitting on top of each other. So if one goes, you've got a domino effect.
Exactly.
Okay.
In fact, they're slamming into each other to set each other up faster.
Yes.
And I was really challenged by that record, because I would spend. Well, a lot more time than I should have building these things. It's kind of exciting because, you know, you get nervous and your hands start shaking and you're setting these things on top of each other.
Oh, my gosh.
And then all of a sudden they go, you know, and it's a great adrenaline rush. And I think that's what causes people to start rebuilding them.
Right.
Well, I'd done 8 and then went to a conference and somebody got up to 18 levels. I couldn't believe it. I had actually sent some to Singapore, and a guy sent a picture back, and they had gotten 29 levels, which was incredible to me.
How tall is 29 levels?
Let's see, that's probably, well, it's about my chest height, so.
So not quite like 6 feet.
Right, it's a little bit lower than that.
Okay.
And then, because I didn't want to be beaten, I had to go higher than that, and sure enough, the very first attempt, here I'd gone 8 for so long, and the very first attempt, I went up to 32 levels.
How tall is that?
Now that's getting closer to 6 feet.
Oh my gosh. So is that the record?
Well, the current record is 52 levels.
And who owns that record?
Well, I currently own that one.
Oh my gosh. So how tall is 52?
52 is right at 8 feet high, or a ceiling height.
Oh my! Now, did you stop because the ceiling was there?
No, I kind of pre-planned it just in case, because I had never built them that high and didn't do the math to figure out how high it would be.
Right.
So I got into a room that had a high vaulted ceiling.
Uh huh.
And had a nice firm floor, concrete floor, and no wind.
Oh my gosh!
And I'm dying for somebody to pick some mousetraps up and beat that record.
So they have to beat 52.
52
levels is what you, if you want to, so this, if you've heard the, if you're listening to this recording, Sam Sykes wants you to send him a photo?
Absolutely.
Okay. And we're going to have Sam share his contact information here in just a minute, but, so Sam, tell us about some of your favorite props. Obviously, mouse traps are some, and I know you have. We talked about noodles. What are some of the others?
Well, I'd say, you know, a plain old bowling ball is another one of my favorites. One of the things I use it mostly for is a giant Texas lizard egg. It's in the Zircon Gorilla book, where basically you're using buddy ropes and a bowling ball,
mm-hmm.
and the team is trying to work together. They can't touch the bowling ball, but they can hold the end of a rope, and they lift this ball up and put it into a nest or a box. And it's surprisingly difficult.
I can imagine. And so how many people does it take to do that? Just holding on to those 5-foot ropes.
With as few as 6 people, you can do it.
Wow.
You'd have about 10 people, but when they string the ropes the right way, it's not so difficult.
And how heavy is the average bowling ball?
Well, I don't know. I think the heaviest they get are 16 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And that's a pretty good weight. You just have to be real cautious when you're transporting them in your car. Make sure they're actually in a box or in a container, because I almost lost my dashboard one time.
Oh, my gosh. You hit the brakes and it went...
And it doesn't even have to be a hard hit on the brakes either. That thing's heavy.
Oh, man. So now, have you ever traveled with that prop on a plane?
I typically will just go and get that one elsewhere if I can. And you can find them at places like thrift stores.
Uh-huh.
Go to a Goodwill kind of spot, or even to a bowling alley. If they have scratches or dents on them, no big deal for the activities. But the pool halls typically will throw them away.
And how much would they charge you for it?
Typically in like a thrift store, they're maybe $2.
Wow.
So they're, you know, very inexpensive.
Yeah.
You don't want to get just gobs of them because they have to store them or something. I've told people they could use a bandsaw and cut them in half and use them as stepping stones or something. But
have you ever done that?
I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
but I have gotten one that's cut in half and used it on the top of a pole, like for a pamper pole.
Yes.
Just as a, you know, something so that people can't set their cups on top of the small just right descender.
Right, right. So any other favorite props that you have?
Well, let's see. Oh, pool balls, I would guess, would be the other one that would be one of my most popular. And I use that for games like Executive Marbles or Raptor. And you're actually throwing these things to try to hit other pool balls.
Huh. This is a team-building activity.
It's a team-building activity. And they're great for juggling, too, as long as you know, you're outside. You don't want to be on a nice floor.
Right. And how do you get pool balls?
The easiest way I've found is simply to go to a pool hall and ask if they have any discarded pool balls. I'd gone to one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it just made me sick because the guy said, "Oh, I wish you'd come by last week. We threw away 4 barrels of balls."
4 barrels?
Yes. He said when they get scratched, they can't use them for the play, and so they throw them away. And so I told him I was working with a group of youth at the time, and he sent me to another store, and they gave me a milk crate full of them.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, if you want new ones, and you want 8 balls, because 8 balls are usually stolen.
Are they really? From the pool hall?
From the pool hall. And so you don't find very many 8 balls in the discarded ones. But you can go to places like Walmart, and they're pretty reasonably priced. So if you want a new set, that works fine.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, Sam, you have an amazing amount of experience working with all kinds of props, and you have some of the most fabulous stories. I wish we had time to go into all of these. I could listen to you for a long time. All the different experiences you've had, and let me have our listeners learn how they can learn more about you and the work that you're doing and where to find your books. Can you share maybe what you're up to, what your next book is on, if you're working on one, and
sure,
how people can find you?
Well, absolutely. The next project I have going is one with Chris Cavert and Faith Evans it's a book called The More the Merrier, and it's about doing activities with really large groups. It's more of a how-to than it is just an activity book.
Mm. And when you say large groups, how big is a large group?
Oh, bigger than 20 and smaller than, you know, 50,000. So
wow.
In between is fine. But it should be a great resource. We're currently working on that, hoping to get it out this year.
Wow.
And
how would they find that?
Well, when it's out, and actually for any of the books and things like that, you can go to doingworks.com, and you can just look through there, and it's pretty easy to navigate.
Okay.
But if you have any specific questions for me, you can always email me at sam@doingworks.com and find out about things like team building and facilitator training that I love to do. Also do workshops and some keynote speaking as well.
Yes. And you do travel. You're based out of Texas, correct?
Yes. Just moved to Texas from the Tulsa area.
Okay.
And so now that I'm down here, I've started up doing works. And in Tulsa, was working with Learning Unlimited. And so actually either place works just fine for contact information.
Yes. Well, I have to encourage all of our listeners to go and get at least one of Sam's books. All of them are fantastic. They're, your sense of humor, your insight, your creativity comes out in every one of your books, and I so enjoy reading them, and I tell people about them. You're just a... have some great things to share with people, whether they're a beginner or an advanced facilitator, and just looking for new ideas, or maybe you're just starting out. And so, Sam, your work is easy to read, and the way you've written it makes it easy to implement.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for that. Well, Sam, I want to thank you again for your time on this interview today. And again, it's to reach you, it's doingworks.com, and your email address is sam@doingworks.com. And your list of all your services and your books can be found at your website, correct?
That's right.
All right. Well, this is Tom Heck with teachmeteamwork.com signing off, and thanking you again for listening to this recording. Bye-bye.